If you have your Bibles, we're going to be reading in the 39th chapter of Genesis. Genesis chapter 39. And we'll probably read the whole chapter, just 23 verses, so don't... I remember when I was a kid, I guess sometimes the preacher would say something about reading the whole chapter, and it would be like, oh. But... not that that would be a bad thing if it was 60-something verses, but sometimes our attention spans maybe can make it difficult to listen to a lengthy reading lesson. Although my dad, when he was preaching, sometimes he would say, if you're going to have times when you listen and don't listen, it's probably good to listen when God's Word is being read and maybe tune out a little bit on some of the other stuff. Hopefully, you listen to it all. But in Genesis chapter 39, we're going to be reading part of the story of Joseph. So as an introduction to, before chapter 39, Joseph was one of the sons of Jacob, who God changed his name to Israel. And Joseph was... a favored son. It says that he was Jacob's favorite. He was one of the sons of Jacob's favorite wife, Rachel. And we won't go into too much of the details, but needless to say, Joseph's family situation was a little bit messed up. There were multiple wives, there were favorite wives, there were favorite children. Within the children, there was deceit and murder and incest and just a lot of things going on that are not part of God's design for the family. But Joseph, he was the favored son, and even when he was young, so he was 17 at the time when Jacob, his father, wanted him to kind of be an overseer, if you will, of his brothers, and I guess probably for some good reason, Jacob didn't always trust what his children were up to, and so he had Joseph go and check on them. Joseph's brothers, or at least his older brothers, Benjamin, his younger brother, was probably, we don't know exactly how much younger Benjamin was than Joseph. He probably didn't participate in any of these things. He was probably too young at the time. But all of Joseph's older brothers, they clearly saw that he was their dad's favorite. Joseph had already revealed to them that he had a dream that they were going to be bowing down and before him. And Joseph, the Bible doesn't exactly tell us, but we kind of get the picture that Joseph was a little bit boastful in the way that he presented it to his brothers. And even his father was... Joseph was the favorite, but even Jacob, his father, was frustrated that Joseph would be having these dreams of his brothers and even his parents to be bowing down before him. So his brothers, they devised a plan. They were going to kill him, and then they decided, at least one of them convinced them that they would make more money and it would be more profitable for them to actually sell him into slavery than to kill him. They figured it would be the same difference in terms of they wouldn't have to deal with his blood directly on their hands, but I'm sure they had the picture that once he was sold into slavery that they would never have to deal with him again. He would probably die, and that would be that. So he was sold into slavery, and we kind of pick up there in chapter 39. Starting with verse 1, it says, "And Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. And Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him, and he made him overseer over his house, and all that he had he put into his hand. And it came to pass from the time that he had made him overseer in his house, and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he knew not aught he had, save the bread which he did eat. And Joseph was a goodly person and well favored. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph, and she said, Lie with me. But he refused and said unto his master's wife, Behold, my master wotteth not what is with me in the house, and he hath committed all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater in the house, in this house than I, neither hath he kept any thing from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? And it came to pass, as she spake to Joseph day by day, that he hearkened not unto her to lie by her or to be with her. And it came to pass about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his business, and there was none of the men of the house there within. And she caught him by his garment, saying, Lie with me. And he left his garment in her hand and fled and got him out. And it came to pass, when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and was fled forth, that she called unto the men of her house and spake unto them, saying, See, he hath brought in an Hebrew unto us to mock us. He came in unto me to lie with me, and I cried with a loud voice. And it came to pass, when he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled and got him out. And she laid up his garment by her until his Lord came home. And she spake unto him according to these words, saying, The Hebrew servant which thou hast brought unto us came in unto me to mock me. And it came to pass, as I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled out. And it came to pass, when his master heard the words of his wife, which she spake unto him, saying, After this manner did thy servant to me, that his wrath was kindled. And Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound, and he was there in the prison. But the Lord was with Joseph, and showed him mercy, and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison, and whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it. The keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand, because the Lord was with him, and that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper. And we'll stop our reading there in the 23 verses of the 39th chapter of Genesis. And so there's kind of two parallel stories we see here of Joseph, and where Joseph was in a position. We have to keep in mind he was a slave. He was sold into slavery, and he was taken from his land, from his home, and he was taken all the way to Egypt. And that's where, so it talks about his master being Potiphar. Potiphar was a captain of the guard and an officer for Pharaoh in the Egyptian army. So he was a powerful man in Egypt, and he had any number of slaves, and Joseph was one of those. And we see that Joseph, it says that the Lord was with Joseph. And it's interesting, it says, and he was a prosperous man, or a successful man, in the context of he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. Now, if you had asked Joseph, being a Hebrew slave in Egypt was probably not his idea of being a prosperous or a successful man. But in the context of where he was successful. And it said God was with him. And so God directed him, and there was, we will get back to this word time and time again, but God showed him favor. So he had God's favor, and the things that Joseph did, the actions that he took, the way that he managed his affairs and the affairs of his master, God made it to prosper in such a way that an Egyptian who, Potiphar, probably was not a worshiper of Jehovah. The Egyptians, by and large, were pagans that believed in false gods. Joseph, as he rose in the ranks later on, when he was made to be the second most powerful man, arguably in the whole world, as Pharaoh's right-hand man, he was given a priest's daughter, I believe it was, to be his wife. And this was a priest that was in a pagan temple in Egypt. So Potiphar probably did not have great insight into who Jehovah was, and knowing exactly he certainly didn't know about the law and all the covenants that God had with Abraham and with Isaac and with Jacob. But he recognized, it says, that and his master saw that the Lord was with him. Joseph probably knew or had mentioned that about God. Potiphar knew he was a Hebrew, and Joseph had probably mentioned something about the Jehovah, the God of the Hebrews that he worshiped. And Potiphar recognized that God, that he had God's favor. And so he left his affairs with Joseph. It says that he made him the overseer of his house, and it's so much so that it says that he knew not all he had. He didn't really know what he had. He did not keep the books. He wasn't going behind Joseph and checking things. He really had no clue what was going on in his household, how much money there was, probably how many servants, all the different ins and outs of his household, of his affairs. He didn't know what was going on. He trusted Joseph. Joseph was providing him the bread, and I'm sure there was plenty of food for him to eat. He recognized that things were going well and that God was blessing Joseph, and he sort of left it at that. Potiphar's wife comes into the scene. It says that Joseph was a goodly person and well-favored. Some of the other translations, if you read those, it talks about Joseph's appearance, that he was a young Hebrew, and he was, for whatever was considered to be attractive during that time period, which was probably quite a bit different than what the world projects today, but that he was considered to be handsome, and he caught the eye of his master's wife, and she tried to get him to lie with her, to have an affair with her. And she, even though he refused, she was on to him. It says, day by day, that she spake to Joseph, and that he wouldn't listen to her, and that he would not take her up on her offer. She finally either found a good opportunity or arranged for there to be a good opportunity to be alone with Joseph, and she thought that she could put him in a compromising position, and she did. She took his clothes, but he, rather than allowing that to affect him, he ran away. She used it as an opportunity to lie and to say that he had tried to come to her when she did not want him to, that she had screamed, and that he had run away. She even went as far as really to blame her husband. She says, "The Hebrew servant which thou hast brought unto us came in unto me to mock me." Reminds me a little bit of the words that Adam used when he was talking with God. "This woman that you gave me, God, gave me the fruit and I ate it." So she blamed Joseph, she blamed her husband, and saying, and she used the fact that he was a Hebrew. The Hebrews, the Jewish people, were considered an abomination to the Egyptians. They weren't even allowed to eat with them. We see that later on, that the Egyptians would have to eat separate because it was an abomination for them to eat with the Hebrews, with the Jewish people. So she used the fact that he was a Jew, that he was a Hebrew, and she played that up, and she convinced her husband that Joseph had tried to abuse his power. His master was angry. We don't exactly know why Potiphar put Joseph in prison. I would assume in that day and time, if a slave in a household was accused and thought to be really guilty of the crime that Joseph was accused of, they would probably have been killed. But for whatever reason, whether Joseph still had enough favor in Potiphar's eyes, or if Potiphar's wife intervened because she still wanted to try to have a relationship with Joseph, we don't know the reasons why, but he was put in prison. And then once he was in prison, we recognize that a similar pattern takes place. It says in verse 21, "But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy." The word mercy there is really chesed, which is a word that's used a lot in the Old Testament about God's covenant love for His people. And so God's covenant love, or His mercy, was displayed. And it says, and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. So what does the keeper of the prison do? He does what Potiphar did. He puts Joseph in charge. He puts Joseph and he commits the prisoners to Joseph. And he says, and whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it. The keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand, because the Lord was with him, and that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper. So the keeper of the prison, just as Potiphar, recognized that God was with Joseph. So he recognized that there was a recognition that it was beyond just that Joseph was a good person. Although I do want to talk about Joseph's integrity, because with this story, what I want to try to get to is to talk about favor and integrity. And to talk about favor and integrity in situations where we might not, well, we might think of integrity. We probably would not think about favor in some of the events that we've read about. And integrity, we'll define that, but Joseph's integrity, the way that he handled himself in these situations, it talks about God's favor. It talks about the fact that God was with Joseph, and he was. But we also recognize that Joseph handled himself in such a way that his integrity was unquestioned. His ethics, his morality, the choices that he was going to make were so unquestioned that these people in power that probably didn't know his God, that probably didn't think a whole lot about Hebrews, and yet because of the way that Joseph handled himself, because they recognized that he had God's favor, they gave Joseph a lot of freedom in his slavery. And I want us to kind of think about this, and then we're going to try to apply it to our lives as well. And this is an important lesson. Children, this is an important lesson for you. Adults, it's an important lesson for us as we think about the lessons that we can learn from Joseph's life. And we see a similar pattern, and we'll talk about that recorded in Scripture in different places. Favor, God's favor. We hear about grace a lot in the words mercy and grace and favor. There's certainly a lot of close connections between them. Grace is God's unmerited favor. And so when we talk about God's favor, we're talking about Him being present in someone's life and showing them love, showing them kindness, setting up the events in their life in such a way. We see that Abraham was favored by God. God's people were favored throughout history. The Jewish people were. And God, there was a special relationship. Every human being has blessings from God. If we are breathing air, if our hearts are beating, we have been blessed by God. He is the creator of life. He is the creator of all, and we all share in the blessings that come from being a human being made in the image of God, though it certainly has been corrupted and twisted through sin and through the curse of this world. And yet there's that blessing that we all have as human beings, and yet there are those that have special favor with God. And Joseph was one of those. God was with him in a special way that even those that didn't know about God could recognize it. And it was so powerful, it was so present that even those that maybe didn't worship Jehovah or know a lot about Jehovah, but it was so powerful, it was so present that he was with Joseph that it put Joseph in these positions of power, that people allowed him to do so. They would have never allowed Joseph. Potiphar would have never put this young Hebrew slave to be over his whole household if there wasn't something special in how Joseph's God interacted with him and gave him favor. Potiphar was angry when he threw Joseph in prison. I don't know if Potiphar told the keeper of the prison why Joseph was cast in there. But the keeper of the prison would have never taken a young Hebrew slave and committed all the other prisoners to him if there was not something special in the way that God was interacting with this individual. He had favor. He had mercy. He had chesed, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. He had that covenantal love. He was one of God's people. He was of the lineage of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. And God was going to bless Joseph. Now, when we think about love and grace and favor, we probably don't think about some of the events that occurred in Joseph's life. Joseph was 17 years old when he was sold into slavery. Or at least it says he was 17, I believe, when Jacob sent him out to go check on his brothers. We don't know exactly how much time elapsed, but it's probably safe to assume that he was 17 or very close to it. In our day and time, he would not even be considered a full adult. In their time, really, you weren't considered a full adult and have where you were really listened to, and or at least in the time of Jesus. I don't know about in the time of Joseph. But a lot of times, until you were 30 years old, that was a special time that was designated. Jesus' ministry started when he was 30 years old because that was a time in the Jewish community where you could be a teacher and you could be recognized in that capacity. Joseph was only 17. And Joseph had God's favor and had all this power and upheld himself. He had integrity. And we'll get to that, and then we'll get back to Joseph's timeline a little bit. The definition of integrity is the quality of being honest and having strong moral principles. Moral uprightness, as defined by Oxford Languages, which was the definition I found online, which I think is fitting. So integrity, it's about being honest. It's about that strong moral principles or ethics. There was talk this morning. A lot of people are concerned that integrity, that people's integrity is not what it maybe once was. That people are not as honest as maybe in prior generations. That their ethics, their principles, what they stand for, that it doesn't mean the same thing. Joseph had God's favor, and so we can kind of see this story. We can see it from the side of God, and that's really the side, if we say that Moses is the one that wrote the book of Genesis, and most people believe that he was, he really wrote the story from the lens of Joseph as God's, that it was God's favor, that it was the fact that they saw God's favor. And yet through this, we can also recognize that Joseph displayed integrity. Joseph was still a person. Joseph still had to make choices. When Potiphar's wife approached him and he had the opportunity to have an affair with his master's wife, when saying no was going to jeopardize him and jeopardize perhaps his position in the household, he had to make a choice. And he made the righteous choice. He made the moral principle choice to say no. And he gave her his reasons. He said, "Can I do this great wickedness?" He recognized it would be wrong, and he said, "And sin against God." He didn't want to sin against God. He recognized what Potiphar had done for him, that Potiphar had committed all these things. And he recognized that with the power he was given, there was great responsibility. He had a responsibility. It was morally upright. It was good for him to not take advantage. He said, "Potiphar's given me pretty much everything. The money, the servants, all the things of his household he's put into my hand. I could steal from him and he would never know it. He didn't, I'm paraphrasing here, but Potiphar had no clue what was going on. He just trusted Joseph. We see people that when they have a lapse in their integrity, when their integrity breaks down, we see that sometimes people that are put in charge of things, it's called embezzlement. They will take away from the things that they're supposed to be managing. We see people that are at banks that have access to people's bank accounts and funds do that. The place where I lived previously, we had a homeowners association. And our homeowners association had a lot of trouble with embezzlement, with people that were entrusted to be managing their finances that were stealing money from them. And doing it in such a way, you can steal money in such a way where maybe it's not obvious, where you don't think people will ever recognize it. If you're dealing with hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars, if you take 10 here, 20 here, 100 here, 1,000 here, you can, and you are the one that's in charge of recording it in the books, then you can sometimes, you think, do it in such a way where no one will ever recognize it. And some people may be right. But our HOA, they had someone that managed the properties, that managed the finances for them, and they found out that they were embezzling money, and they had to take them to court. They were stealing from them. There was an employee that had worked at that company, but they didn't think was involved with what had happened, and she started her own kind of independent practice doing the same thing, and they hired her. And it wasn't too long before they figured out she was doing the same thing. Very likely she was probably a part of the company beforehand that was doing it. People, their integrity can break down. And when they're given great power, they take advantage of that. Joseph recognized that he had all this power that Potiphar had given him. And that he could have probably done a lot of things and gotten away with it because no one was coming back around him. No one was looking at the books. No one was really following up. He had the freedom. But Potiphar had made sure not to give Joseph one thing in particular, and that was his wife. And Joseph, his integrity, his moral uprightness, he knew what was right and he stood by it. Even when it forced him to get put into prison. Now, when we think of favor and grace and mercy, probably getting sold into slavery and carried hundreds of miles away from our home is not kind of what we think about when we think about God's favor and His mercy and His blessings. That's what happened to Joseph. When we act with integrity and we do what's right, we probably don't think that God's favor is going to result in us getting cast into prison, being falsely accused of something that we didn't do. That's what happened to Joseph. Joseph was given a lot of leeway in the prison. It says that he was put over the prisoners. We won't read the 40th chapter for time's sake, but Joseph was put in charge of two very prominent prisoners. They were the butler and the baker for Pharaoh. And Pharaoh was the king, if you will, the leader of Egypt. And Egypt at the time was probably the most powerful nation in the world. So the baker and the butler, they were people that had direct access to Pharaoh. They were put into prison for whatever reason. Joseph interpreted dreams for them. And the butler was put back into a position where he was back with Pharaoh. And he was in a position of influence with Pharaoh. And Joseph had told him, when you get back to Pharaoh, because Joseph knew that he was going to, God had allowed him to see what was going to happen in the future. He said, when you get back with Pharaoh, remember me. I'm here falsely. I've done nothing wrong and I'm in this prison. I've been sold into slavery. I've been cast into prison. I've not done anything wrong. When you're in front of Pharaoh, remember me. Well, everything happened the way Joseph said. The butler goes back and is with Pharaoh. But the very last verse in chapter 40 says, "Yet did not the chief butler remember Joseph, but forgot him." When we think of God's favor, we probably aren't thinking about doing the right thing. And there's all these different situations where it appeared as if Joseph, the tide was going to turn for Joseph. He was made the master over Potiphar's house, and then he was cast into prison. He was given the opportunity to be over the prisoners. And here was this opportunity where he was able to tell the butler what was going to happen. And the butler was going to be in Pharaoh's presence. And he said, "Remember me." The butler goes into Pharaoh's presence, but he forgets him. In fact, he forgets him for 2 full years, as it tells us in verse 1 of chapter 41. Joseph was 28 at the time that the butler was restored to his position with Pharaoh. That's 11 years. 11 years that, and we don't know how much of that time he was in Potiphar's household and how much of that time he was in prison. But unless it was skewed too far one way or the other, we can assume that he was in prison for years, though he had done nothing wrong. Sure, he was given a position of favor in the prison, but he was still in prison. He was still a slave in an Egyptian prison. And even after the butler was restored, 2 more years he had to wait. He was 30 years old when he was finally released from that prison to go and to talk to Pharaoh. 13 years. He was in a position where we would not really think about him being favored, though the Bible said that he was a successful or a prosperous man. Through that time, he kept his integrity. It never says that he ever did anything that he shouldn't have with Potiphar's household. He never did anything he wasn't supposed to with the prisoners that were put under his watch in the prison. As we try to think about this and put and apply it to our own lives, there's a pattern. This isn't Joseph. I've used this one, and I think in a lot of cases it goes into more details we can see in Joseph's life. But you'll see, if you read through the Old Testament, you'll see this pattern repeated in a lot of different times. You'll see it with David in his interactions with Saul. So David, once again, he was favored by God. But even in his favor with God, he spent years hiding in the wilderness, hiding in caves and running away from King Saul because Saul wanted to kill him. And David did nothing wrong in his interactions with Saul. He remained faithful to Saul as his king. God had told him that he was going to be king. Samuel had anointed David. Saul was furious, but David, he served Saul. He had no intentions of trying to take over the kingship from Saul. And yet he had to run away. He had to flee because Saul was angry with him and wanted to kill him. And this went on for years before Saul and Jonathan, his son, were killed in battle and David became king. We see it with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They were, again, they were slaves, if you will. They were exiles from Judah, and they were living in a foreign land under a foreign government. But they had favor in God's eyes, and the people that were in charge recognized that they had favor with God, and they recognized that they handled their affairs well, and they were put in positions of power. And yet their enemies conspired against them and ultimately had them thrown into the fiery furnace. We see it with Daniel. Daniel was in a similar situation with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He was an exile, but he was, once again, a man of integrity. He handled his affairs well. He had favor with God. And he was put in a position of leadership. But his enemies conspired against him and had him thrown in the lion's den. God's favor is not always shown with wealth and health and prosperity. Joseph was had God's mercy in his favor, though he was a slave in prison. And now, Joseph, one might could look at the story and say, yeah, but I mean, God had already showed Joseph that he was gonna be in a position of power and his brothers were gonna bow down to him. God had a plan for Joseph that he was gonna be the second most powerful person probably in the world, and that he was going to use Joseph to allow for God's people to survive the great famine that was coming. And God did that. You can say God had great plans for Joseph. Well, guess what? Not a lot has changed. God, though he maybe has not revealed it to us, still directs our paths just as he did for Joseph. God had plans for Joseph, as he does for us today. We may not be the right-hand person to a Pharaoh or a king. We may not be the president. We may not be, as Joseph was, put in this position of great authority and power, and yet God is directing the events in our lives just as he was for Joseph. Joseph was favored in the eyes of God. Guess what? If you're a child of the King, if Jesus Christ is your Savior, your Lord, your Master, guess what? You have favor in the sight of God. You have mercy. You have great love in the eyes of your Creator. It may not always look like what we would expect. Naomi was a Hebrew woman. She had a husband. She had two sons. And they went away from their homeland because of a famine, a different famine, to try to find food. And along the way, her husband and her children died. And she was so bitter, she renamed herself for her name to mean bitter. And she essentially decided that God was against her. God would later on bless her through her daughter-in-law, Ruth. But there's this idea of people that when events go bad, that God is against us, that something's wrong, that we're not doing what we're supposed to be doing, and that's not to say that the consequences of our sins don't catch up to us in our lives. But God's favor, we need to recognize that His favor does not always look like what the world will tell you. God's favor does not look like what somebody in the church might tell you that it looks like. The simple truth is not that when you have God's favor and you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, that everything's going to be going great, and that when you're far away from God and He's punishing you, that your life's going to look terrible. It does not always look that way on the surface. You hear it rains on the just and the unjust, and it's true. God's people get sick just as those that want to have nothing to do with God. We all are under the curse for these physical bodies to die. And many of God's people, many of the saints of old, have laid their lives down here in this world to go and be with the Lord. God's favor goes beyond the ups and downs of this world. When we're on the mountaintop and things are going good and we feel the presence of God and work's going well, marriage is going great, kids are doing well, everything just feels like it's clicking together. And maybe not all of that happens all at the same time. If it does, it probably doesn't last just a really long time. And when we're in the valleys of sickness, of pain, of loss, of grief, God's favor is still there. His mercy is still there. And it's an important lesson for us that we not lose our integrity. Joseph was mistreated a lot of times. He was mistreated by his brothers. He was mistreated by his master and his master's wife. His master's wife for trying to make him commit sin. His master for not investigating and for just casting him in prison without seeing whether or not Joseph was actually guilty of what he was accused of. He was mistreated by the butler that skipped on his way back to Pharaoh and didn't even think about Joseph for 2 whole years until Pharaoh had a dream and all of a sudden the butler remembered him. And we know that God was directing these things and putting things in place. But it doesn't change the fact that Joseph was mistreated many different times by many different people. When we're mistreated, it can be really easy for us to want to lose our integrity. It can be easy for us to want to lash back out, for us to say hateful and hurtful things, for us to act in a way that is not becoming of a child of God, to not act in a way that Christ taught us to act. When we're dealing with the people of this world and we recognize that people are mistreating us, though we've done nothing wrong, maybe they speak badly about us, maybe they do something to cut us off and to take advantage of us. Think about it's oftentimes an analogy that people use when you're about to get that parking spot and you've been waiting patiently for it and this person swoops in and just nabs it from you before you get a chance to pull in. People do that in life, not just with parking spots. But we're not always treated fairly. And yet we're given the examples of what we're supposed to do and how it makes a difference to uphold our integrity when things are going great and when people are mistreating us and abusing us, when we don't feel like we're getting fairness. Fair is a lot of things. I expect Lily will probably use that word at some point, and I'd say many of your children have as well. That's not fair. We want things to be fair. When you get right down to it, when you really look into the Scriptures, you realize we don't actually want things to be fair. We don't want to have to feel the consequences of all of our wrongdoings. We actually want someone to intervene on our behalf. We want grace. We need grace. Because fairness applied just to us puts us in a devil's hell. But fairness sometimes says that if you're being mistreated, it's okay to mistreat. And that's not what we've been instructed to do. We talked about the examples. Of course, Jesus is always our main example. And certainly Jesus held his integrity throughout his entire life. Jesus was God's beloved Son in whom he was well pleased. God the Father forsook Jesus. He was forsaken when he was on the cross at Calvary. And yet Jesus was given victory over the grave, over death, over sin, over Satan in his triumphal resurrection. And he reigns as King forever and forevermore. Favor for him did not always look like what you would expect. In his integrity, he was falsely accused many different times. He was mistreated. He was beaten. He was betrayed by his friend, by someone that he had treated as his friend, that he had allowed to have a great closeness and fellowship with him. And even those that he wasn't betrayed by, he was abandoned by his closest friends that he had here in this world. He had to go through a lot of those valleys where it didn't really seem like there was a lot of favor to be had. And throughout it all, he always, always acted in accordance with God's will. He obeyed, he submitted, he was morally upright in his dealings with Judas, in his dealings with the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the scribes, in his dealings with Peter and all his apostles that abandoned him. Paul talks about how if you just say good things and treat your brother well or your friends, that even the heathen do that, that there's something special when you do it with your enemies. We can't do anything without God. God had to be the leader, the director, the one showing favor in Joseph's life. And in response to that, Joseph had integrity. He made righteous choices when he was presented with the options. And the two things, they're so hard, but they go hand in hand. God's favor and man's integrity. And through these things, if we will apply them to our life today, children, I want you to remember this. As you go into life, as you are interacting with your friends in school, as you get older and you start to interact with people in jobs and in this world, remember that word integrity. Doing what is right. And integrity applies when no one's watching. When only God is going to see what choice you make, integrity is there. And you're making the right choice. Do it even when it's not easy. Do it even when other people are not. And don't ever feel like that you have been abandoned by God. His favor, His mercy, His grace are right there, even in our lowest moments. Even in the times where we may feel like we've been abandoned, God is there. He was with Joseph, and it was apparent that he was with Joseph, even in all of these tough situations that he had to go through. And as Christians, we're called to do this, and it makes a difference. We don't know what the future holds for us. We don't know what we're going to see this year, 5 years from now, 10 years from now. A lot of people think things are going to get worse in terms of people's integrity. Some people think things are going to get worse in terms of the freedoms that Christians have to be able to worship freely. We don't know what the future holds. We don't know how we're going to be treated. We don't know what people are going to say or do. But we have the direction of how to respond. And it's not to say that we don't stand up. But first and foremost, we stand up for what is right. Even in the prisons, the physical prisons and the symbolic prisons. The world is not going to see much of what happens in our church services. We post our sermons on sermon audio, and it's interesting to see the reports when you see that people from 29 different countries listened to sermons in the last month or something. The vast majority of the world is not going to hear those sermons. They're not going to know what happens within these walls. But they will see how those that profess the name of Christ, how we uphold ourselves as we go about our daily lives in this world. Don't lose your integrity. And don't lose faith in the favor that you have with your Father in heaven. He had great plans for Joseph. He has great plans for us. May we be obedient to His will. And even when we don't feel, sometimes we have a hard time. We don't feel the presence of God. We don't feel that warmth inside of us. We don't always, it doesn't always feel joyful like we're going to shout and sing and praise Him from the rooftops. But know it. Know it in your heart. Know it in your mind, deep down inside, that God is there. And that we can do all things through Christ who strengthens us, while we have a song.